This is Second Look. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director. So glad to have your company today. Please stick around for some General Assembly news. We'll take a look at a Republican proposal to give taxpayers whose kids are homeschooled or in private school a break on the taxes they still pay to support the public schools. We also continue with our special Refugees in Virginia series. Our focus this week is on child refugees. But let's start out with yesterday's mock convention in Lexington. Every 4 years, students at Washington and Lee University do this. It's known as MockCon. And in its 108-year quadrennial history, they've done a really good job of predicting the nominee of the party out of the White House. Before the convention, WMRA's Jesse Nadler sat down with the organizers.
It would be hard to overstate the lure of Washington and Lee's mock convention for some students.
MockCon was actually something that drew me here.
There's no project quite like this that offers students the opportunity to understand the way the political system functions from a huge number of different angles.
I knew ever since high school I wanted to major in politics. And so the chance to be in close proximity to Washington, D.C., but also have this mock convention and just the fantastic faculty that we have here really drew me.
That's Senior Randy Carlson, Junior John and Senior Kevin Ortiz, respectively. Kevin is the guy ultimately responsible for predicting the Republican nominee for president. More about that in a minute. Senior Andrew McCaffrey, a civil engineering major, was tapped to serve as grand chair by the 2012 governing committee. He and his team have been working on the 26th mock convention for 4 years, since they were first-year students. This on top of being full-time students.
It was a chance to build a company up from the ground, because we really are, a $500,000 company, if not more, and with over 100 people on staff.
The budget comes primarily from fundraising by students. Mock Convention is essentially a research project executed by 56 state and territory delegations comprised of students tasked with conducting research in their respective states. They do this by studying the local political scene, interviewing political professors, GOP officials, elected officials, anyone they can talk to. They also look at public opinion polls and who has the best ground game in their respective states. A lot rides on the outcome. In the convention's long history, students have been wrong 6 times. They haven't been wrong about predicting a Republican nominee since 1948. But the 2016 prediction is a bit tricky, summed up by 2 words, Donald Trump.
He starts off with his speech about immigrants from Mexico, and everyone's like, oh, that's going to doom his candidacy.
This is political analyst Kevin Ortiz again.
Well, no, he just continues and continues to defy expectations, and so it's hard for us on the political prediction team. Does he continue to defy expectations all the way to the White House?
The mock convention provides a snapshot of where the party is at any given time. And right now, what it means to be a Republican is a contested thing.
Is it going to be this country club type of party that it has been in the past? Or is it going to be this much more populist grassroots organization, which we really first saw in 2010 when the Tea Party first made its, big appearance on the national stage and helping the Republicans take back the House of Representatives.
The New Hampshire primary, in which, as a primary day, Donald Trump leads in the polls, provides the final thrust toward a prediction. But that doesn't necessarily mean he'll win the nomination. Another major draw for MockCon is the speaker lineup, which in previous years has included Harry Truman, Richard Nixon, Jimmy Carter, and Bill Clinton. This year's roster includes Republican heavyweights Dick Cheney, Newt Gingrich, and Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin. Here's Junior John Crum, co-communications director, again.
We want to hear about the future of the party. We want to hear Republicans talk about what it means to them to be a Republican.
Author Kristen Anderson, who wrote a book about millennials and the GOP, is also on board to speak, which is of particular interest to other communications director Randy Carlson.
I'm interested to see how her and the rest of the speakers sort of address us as students in this time when, millennials are seemingly disengaged from politics and we're actively defying that.
It seems like every time you've got a new generation, the young people don't really care about politics.
This is Grand Chair Andrew McCaffrey talking.
This is an example of students going out of their way and going above and beyond the call of duty to say, no, take a look at what we think. This is important to us.
The executive committee wouldn't drop any hints as to which way the winds are blowing, but the pressure's on. Students inaccurately predicted Donald Trump as the winner of the Iowa caucuses. Regardless, John Crum says the event is ultimately a huge learning experience.
It's offers practical experience in communications and public relations, in fundraising, accounting, in business, in marketing, in all kinds of different dimensions of real-world activity.
But seriously, what if Kevin Ortiz, the guy tasked with making the final prediction, gets it wrong? He seems pretty sanguine about it.
My squash teacher has joked that they're going to all throw squash balls at me if we get it wrong.
The sold-out mock convention takes place this weekend. For WMRA News, I'm Jesse Nadler.
That story was a preview of the convention. We originally aired it last week. So now that the convention is over, who's the Republican nominee this year, according to the student wizards of MockCon? Donald Trump. Well, we'll see how that prediction goes. Now to the latest stories in our refugees series. Sometimes one reason that refugees flee their home countries is to ensure the safety of their children so that they may have a future. In the fourth installment of WMRA's special series, Jordy Yeager looks at the community of people in Charlottesville working towards that end.
It's 2:30 on a typical Wednesday afternoon, and Greenbrier Elementary School has just let out for the day. After 16 years of teaching here, Mary Plank retired 2 years ago, but she's back today. In fact, she comes back twice a week now to see two students in particular.
But you can get big.
I want to tell you something. You read that beautifully, but the first time you read it, you said, when you are big, and you know what you did? You went back and you said, wait, that's not R. You fixed it, didn't you? You made a mistake and you fixed it, and you want to know something? That's what good readers do.
Now, this may sound like a typical after-school reading lesson, but it's not. Plank students are 7-year-old Maylene and her 8-year-old cousin, Bibek. And English is not their first language. They were both born in refugee camps more than 7,000 miles away in Nepal. Every Monday and Wednesday, Plank meets with them after school. She reads a story aloud in English while they snack on apples, carrots, and string cheese. And then they get down to business. About an hour's worth of reading and math lessons.
It's really what I would do with my own children, maybe after school, and maybe a teeny bit more, you know, actual academic work. But I try to slip it in a game or something to make it fun.
Plank is a volunteer with a new nonprofit in Charlottesville called International Neighbors. It pairs American and refugee families in an attempt to help them adjust to life here in the U.S. Maylene and her family moved here in 2010. Her cousin Bibek and his family arrived in 2012. Both came through the International Rescue Committee's Refugee Resettlement Program. English is a struggle for most refugee parents. They often don't understand the mounds of paperwork their kids come home from school with. The difference between a vocab worksheet and a permission slip for a field trip. If the kids come home and say they don't have homework, which, let's be honest, we all did, how can they check and make sure? Or how do they know to help Maylene with her math skills so she doesn't fall behind?
I actually asked the parents, do you know what's happening at school? No. Do you want to know what's happening at school? Yes.
Because so many refugee children go to Greenbrier Elementary, the school usually hires several interpreters, and the teachers hold parent-teacher conferences at the homes of dozens of refugee families. They know transportation is also difficult for them. But this last semester, the Nepali interpreter was a no-show, so Mary Plank set the wheels in motion to get another interpreter and a special conference for Maylene and Bibek's parents.
I think it was important for all of us to make it clear to both of them that this, we are working together. We all care about them, and we all want to see them succeed, so we're all going to stay on top of this.
But it's not just the practical things. International Neighbors also tries to give them experiences. On a recent Sunday, 10 refugee kids got donated tickets from a local theater for a sing-along of the movie Frozen. Maylene wore her ice blue Elsa dress. And this coming Valentine's Day, Plank's planning to have the kids over to her house to make heart-shaped cookies to give to their classmates. Now, that might seem normal to Americans, but for refugees, it's still a world away. And it doesn't stop there. In the spring, they want to get Bibek into a soccer league. The group's founder, Kari Miller, says they're also trying to fund swimming and tennis lessons and gymnastics and ballet classes for dozens of other refugee children.
Most American children after school have commitments like that, piano lessons or art lessons or football. And not until they're in high school do all students really get to access that if it's offered by school. But I feel like it's just such a division. It's not encouraging global community.
Of course, International Neighbors is just formalizing something that Miller, Plank, and dozens of others have done for decades. Plank told me about another teacher who for years quietly funded ballet lessons for a refugee student. And Plank herself recalled a young 9-year-old girl from Afghanistan who came into her classroom 13 years ago while she was still teaching at Greenbrier.
She was
the most amazing little girl, and I think she changed my life more than I changed her life. Because I saw this child who came from such a horrendous background, had just lost her father in a refugee camp in Afghanistan, gets sort of dumped into the middle of, you know, a culture, speaks no English, and came into my room smiling, cheerful, looking for work. And she was persistent, she was tenacious, and she was just always so happy to learn.
Samira, or Mira as she's known to friends, is now 22. She'll graduate this year from the University of Mary Washington with a sociology major and a minor in Middle Eastern studies. She says she couldn't have done it without Mary Plank.
Just her, like, pushing me and not giving up on me and supporting me and stuff and just being there for me, it made me feel accepted as, like, just, like, I guess, like, equal, almost, like, equal to everyone else, because to myself, I didn't feel equal. I mean, I dressed differently. I didn't eat the same food as, like, everyone else, and I didn't speak the language. I felt different, but I think Ms. Plank definitely, like, helped me feel equal and just accepted.
As a kid, Mira remembers hearing horror stories of the Taliban in her home country. She remembers fleeing to Pakistan, where her father died from cancer. She remembers having to take care of her mother when they arrived in Charlottesville because she didn't speak any English. She's so grateful her mom brought her and her brothers to America, but she remembers wishing her mom could help her with her homework like her friend's parents did, or help her with complicated financial aid forms for schools. Now, she's planning to get her master's in speech pathology to help autistic children. She also wants to help refugee parents in the U.S. be more involved in their kids' lives. So she teaches classes to women from Afghanistan and helps two refugee families in Fredericksburg in much the same way that Plank does with the Bhutanese in Charlottesville. It seems the student has become the teacher, and one can't help but think perhaps we're getting a peek into Maylene and Bebeck's future. For WMRA News, I'm Jordy Yeager.
Remember high school? Even if those were great years for you, there were certainly times when you felt a little lost or left out. Well, imagine going to high school in another country, with another language and another culture. Oh, and you may also be carrying trauma from some horrific things that you witnessed in your home country. Jesse Nadler has the story of a Harrisonburg High School program that pairs refugee students with others who have been there.
Guess what is the second most common foreign language behind Spanish spoken at Harrisonburg City Schools? Give up? It's Arabic. 11% of students come from Arab-speaking homes. Harrisonburg's school system is really where you see the city's status as an immigration hub come to life. More than one out of every three students are identified as limited English speakers. Within that population, kids come from 47 different countries with more than 48 languages spoken. Behind the U.S., the majority of students are born in Iraq and Honduras. High school is already kind of a nightmare. Peer pressure, academic pressure, identity issues, body image issues. Now add to that the stress, the language barriers, the trauma of being a refugee from a war-torn country, and you get an idea of how difficult it can be to navigate high school.
Since I was a kid, there was war there in Baghdad. It was like really big war.
This is Ali. He's 19 and from Iraq. Ali's father was granted asylum to come to the United States, but he had to leave his family behind. Ali says he was shot at when it was discovered his father had gone to the U.S.
We was sleeping and wake up with bombs and shooting and people get killed every day.
Ali hadn't seen his father for 5 years until Ali and his brother were finally able to join him in Harrisonburg a year and a half ago. His father, who was a teacher in Baghdad, now works at a turkey processing facility.
Yeah, I miss my country like so much. I had friends, I had family. I was there for 18 years, and you cannot leave your country and forget about it.
Laura Feistinger McGrath takes me into an office and flips through a stack of files of new students to the high school.
Current. This one is from, he's a refugee from Ecuador. She is from El Salvador. She is from Honduras. She is from Mexico. He is from Iraq. He's a returning student from New York.
She's the ESL, that's English as Second Language, coordinator for all Harrisonburg City Schools. Her title is a bit of an understatement, because although she's tasked with making sure kids enrolled in the ESL program, which represents some 10% of the total school population of 1,400, are taught English, some of these kids are dealing with incredibly complex issues. It's what makes her job both rewarding and challenging.
We have students who are joining family for the first time in 10, 15, some of them 17 years. We have students who have seen their friends, family executed, killed, bombed, all sorts of things, and some who've had really traumatic journeys actually into the United States. There's a lot of feelings of abandonment from some of our students. Some of our students have experienced sexual violence.
A lot of immigrant kids end up taking on very adult responsibilities.
I have students who are as young as 11 and 12 who have helped their parents with mortgages. Like, I have no idea how these kids are negotiating that, which is interesting because then we throw them a multiple choice test and say that they're not successful. But the reality is they're negotiating real life, meaningful experiences.
To help refugee students integrate into the high school, a pilot program called Peer Leaders was launched last year using funding from the Harrisonburg Refugee Resettlement Office. It's a mentoring program in which new students are paired with students who were themselves refugees. Peer leaders are given 3 days of training in basic counseling, how to be an active listener, how to ask questions, and crucially, when to refer a problem to an adult.
We don't want kids to carry adult burdens on their backs.
When I came here, I was really scared. I didn't know what to do. I don't know the language. I don't know anyone.
One day, a Kurdish girl approached Ali in the hallway and asked him in Arabic if he was all right. It was a small gesture that meant a lot, to know that someone from his culture was looking out for him. He joined Peer Leaders so he could repeat this kindness to incoming Arab students.
There's a couple when they came here. I took them to classes. I told them some of the rules. I told them if they need help with the teacher, with the counselor, with anything, I'm here to help.
The Peer Leader program has been successful on an ad hoc basis. These are teenagers. It can be difficult to get them to commit to a mentorship program on top of everything else they're dealing with.
They don't know how to articulate all the time what their issues are. And then they don't always realize, adults don't always realize the extreme issues that might be happening in a high school, especially a high school like ours.
It's easy to assume that the stream of refugees at Harrisonburg High is the result of the current global migration crisis. But the demographics have been like this for 15 years. The countries of strife may have changed, Bosnia and Russia to Iraq and Honduras today, but the human beings seeking refuge do not. For WMRA News, I'm Jesse Nadler.
Coming up this week as our series on refugees in Virginia continues, we're going to take a look at a special program in Charlottesville that provides for the medical needs of refugees there. And we'll also take a look at programs that are tailored to help asylum seekers find jobs. Now, let's take a look at one proposal in this session of Virginia's General Assembly. Even if you don't have kids in public schools, you still have to pay taxes that support those schools, just like everyone else. Virginia Public Radio's Mallory Nopain reports on a Republican proposal that would allow parents who homeschool or send their kids to private school get some of their tax money back.
That money wouldn't go straight into parents' pockets, but into a savings account that could only be accessed for educational spending. It's money that Melissa Raber, a parent who homeschools all 9 of her children, says she could really put to good use.
My house is really like an elementary school, a middle school, and a high school all at once.
Before she had kids, Raber was a public school teacher. But each passing year, she felt more restricted by the system. So when she had her own kids, homeschooling was an easy choice.
I want to be able to put my passion into my kids and help them find their passion too. And so it didn't take much.
The Rabers live in the city of Richmond. Melissa Raber and I chatted during a school day, the children working quietly behind us in the kitchen, counting coins for a fundraising project.
The last of it. We rolled a lot of the quarters and the nickels and stuff. We need a microscope, and we need counting things for the little guys, and, you know, we need the beakers and the things that schools would typically have, we have to go out and buy. So the supply list, including the textbooks, that's huge.
Republicans in Virginia want to make sure finances aren't a barrier for families who don't want to send their kids to public school. So they're proposing giving the state's share of per pupil spending back to families who don't send their kids to the public school system. For the Rabers, that could be about $5,000 per kid per year. Melissa Raber says it makes sense.
We're taxpaying citizens of the city, and, you know, we really don't get anything for that. My husband actually said one time, he said, we're saving the city, you know, $100,000 a year by not sending our kids to public school. We'd like a check for that.
But whether they're entitled to that check hinges on whose money you think it is, the taxpayers or the states.
We need to consider these as taxpayer dollars.
Republican Delegate Dave LaRocque is the bill's sponsor.
And we manage them, but the notion of some of that general fund money, which comes in from a variety of sources, going back and being controlled by parents, I wouldn't think it should offend people at all.
But it does offend proponents of public education, who argue the basic idea behind the bill is flawed.
I believe in America that we're using our tax money for the greater good of our society.
Meg Gruber is president of the Virginia Education Association.
There are a lot of us who pay taxes who do not have children in schools, period. And I'd hate to think that some of those taxpayers would say, well, my children aren't in school, so I want my tax money back.
Opponents of the bill also say it's skewed towards helping the wealthy. But Delegate Dave LaRocque says the bill isn't about social justice. It's about enabling choice.
There are many kids that are trapped in failing schools, and I don't know that we're doing them any bigger a favor to require that they stay in a situation that's not working for them than we are to giving some the mobility to leave that situation.
Republican leadership is putting heavy weight behind the measure, touting it as an important component of their education agenda this session. In Richmond, I'm Mallory Nopain.
Support for WMRA's News and Information Fund, which makes our award-winning coverage possible, is provided by Bibb and Dolly Frazier, Eugene Stoltzfus Architects, Joy Loving, Janet Trettner, the Just Pax Fund, an anonymous donor, and by a grant from a donor-advised fund of Harrisonburg in Rockingham County. If you'd like to learn more about our News and Information Fund and how we fund our news, go to WMRA.org, mouse over News, then click on News and Information Fund. Find all of our stories from the newsroom at the website, too, including more information about the Refugees series. Be sure to click like on Facebook at WMRA Public Radio and follow me on Twitter at WMRA News to get the latest on our coverage. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director and morning edition host. I'll talk to you in the morning. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.